Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Carol Finlay. Each week, we visit with a local author or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask them to introduce us to their work. We hope for a glimpse into their lives and find out what prompts them to do what they do. We give them an opportunity to read to us, and we're delighted to have as our guest this week, Carol Finlay. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Reverend Dr. Carol Finlay is the founder and director of Book Clubs for Inmates. She was among 26 people announced as new members of the Order of Ontario on December the 15th, 2016. The order will be presented at a ceremony at Queen's Park in June 2017. Carol is an ordained Anglican priest, a retired English teacher, and her organization now has about 80 volunteers running reading groups in 28 prisons in all parts of the country. So, Carol, I've read that Book Clubs for Inmates was the result of a visit you paid to Collins Bay Penitentiary. How did this all start?
Well, it started actually with a conversation that I had with Jean Vanier at Easter time in 2008. Jean Vanier, of course, is the great humanitarian, Canadian background, now lives in Troilly, started the L'Arche communities, marginalized people. He's very interested and concerned about people on the margin, and he said, really, we needed to pay attention to people in prisons. And it was with that that I felt, because we had a recreational home, my family and I, in the Kingston area, that I should go into prisons. Of course, I thought that I would be going in as a priest to perhaps say prayers in segregation. But the religious side of life in prisons is really well looked after. So I had a cup of coffee with the chaplain who told me this. And he said, think of something else that you might like to do. And after some thought, I thought, well, you know, I wonder if there are any book clubs in Canadian penitentiaries, and I wonder if this might work, because there were book clubs in English penitentiaries, and I was in touch with the English people, two profs who ran several book clubs, and they gave me sort of a template on how to start it. And I thought, well, that's what I try to do. So I went into Collins Bay, and I spoke to a whole group of men, maybe about 18 or 20 of them, and I said, would you like to start a book club? And they said, yes, we'd absolutely love to. I said, have any of you been in a book club, or do you know what a book club's about? And they said, no, but it doesn't matter, miss. Come on back. We'd love to have some books. So I said, well, you know, I have to find some money to buy some books, but yes, I'll be back. So that was the beginning.
And that was the beginning. So how did you find the money to buy the books?
Well, my husband and I actually funded the first few sort of meetings. And later, about a year later, we registered as a charity. But I met those men, about 15 or 20 of them, and I've taught actually in a lot of sort of rough and tough places, elementary school and in high school English. But I'd never met a group like this. There were tattoos all over their body, sort of up one side, down the other, and shaved heads, and very bulked up because, you know, being well-built, being physically fit is very important in penitentiaries. And I couldn't stand up. I just sat, and I was sort of horrified. And they had very blank looks on their faces. They're very suspicious. They did not really know what they were getting into. And I learned, really, I had to use a lot of open-ended questions. The first book that we did was Angela's Ashes. And I said, did you like the book? Well, the first fellow said, no, he didn't like the book. And then they all went down like dominoes. So I realized that, you know, you can't ask them, do you like the book? That may be the end of the discussion. You ask them a lot of open-ended questions and get it going. But, you know, after two or three times, the looks changed. The faces became open. They became so gracious. I thought, my heavens, they remind me of my son, except that they're a lot nicer to me. And they were really quite quite wonderful, that first group in Collins Bay, and I went in with another volunteer. That book club is still going. And the next one we did was in the minimum side of Collins Bay. It was called Frontenac then. And then librarians and chaplains across Ontario found out about us and asked us to start a book club. So I became a fundraiser and administrator. In fact, after a few years, I had no time to go back into that book club at Medium. But I see a lot of those fellows now.
Yes.
They call me when they come out, and we have coffee and chat. A lot of them we've helped in various ways. And we have one on the board, on our board.
Yes, I noticed that when I was reading up about your organization. So how many of those 18 actually came to the next serious book club? How many of them became members of the book club?
Well, I would say about 12 did.
That's marvelous.
You know, but we wouldn't necessarily get 12. Maybe get 10. There's a lot going on in prison. People are called out for all sorts of things. They go to the hole at segregation, where I used to go and drop off a book, and I was so horrified by segregation, I couldn't sleep. But the humor in that group was fabulous, too. I laughed and laughed, and the volunteer and I would say, you know, We get more out of this than the men do. And we've always felt that. And other volunteers across the country have written and said, this is the most wonderful thing I've done, is be with these people. Especially, we're in a lot of Aboriginal healing lodges now. Mm-hmm. And there, it's quite remarkable. There's a lot of self-awareness among people who are in prison, especially for a long time. They're very interesting to talk to. Most of them actually are extremely smart. I mean, you have to be smart if you're going to be a big drug dealer and run drugs across the country or internationally.
Well, it also sounds, though, from what you're saying, that they came together as a group, which must have been a very special effect. People together in prison get rid of some of their suspicion of each other.
That's right. And, you know, we would look across the round the circle and we would see Muslims and Hindus and black and white and Southeast Asians, and they would not necessarily speak to one another within the prison. But around this group, they did. And one of the book club members, or several of them actually, have told us that it breaks down barriers. Mm. That they met people that they wouldn't speak to otherwise, and it sort of helped the life in prison. But we have a sort of a saying that we give out a ton of kindness with every book. One fellow in Bath Institution just told me quite recently, it's the only place where I feel like a human being is in this book club.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, more and more the prisons in Canada are becoming more and more remote and impersonal, and people are known by their numbers or last names, and they've come from very difficult backgrounds.
Yes.
Most of the men and women in prison, and most of them are from the lowest socioeconomic level.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that about 75% are abused in childhood or neglected.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, how and why did you choose the first book you discussed with that group, and how do you choose them now? Well, you've just told us, actually, that Angela's Ashes was what you put before them. But was it a success, really, or did they come round to it? Or?
Well, you know, aside from my very bad questions that I asked them, they did come round to it.
Yeah.
They discussed it. Many of them, I think it triggered sort of misery for them, because many of them grew up with alcoholic parents.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a story of overcoming. It's a story of meeting challenges and surviving, and Frank McCourt certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
And this was inspirational then for the men. And we talked about that. And most of the books that we choose tend to be along that same line. You know, the Book of Negroes is about that, too.
Yes.
Or The Glass Castle, which is incredible, sort of horrible childhood. This woman, Jeanette
yes.
Walls, actually survived and has done very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, are you going to read to us from something that they found really interesting?
I am. And this is a fairly new book, but about half the book clubs have read it. It's called Free Days with George, and it's autobiographical. It's by Colin Campbell. And Colin Campbell had a very good job as a marketing exec in Toronto, and then his wife left, and he never really knew why. And he headed into a very serious and difficult depression. One of his colleagues said to him one day, you know, what you need is a dog or at least a pet. Well, he thought about this, and I think he was sort of scrolling the internet looking at possibilities, and he saw a rescue dog, and then he saw George. George is a Newfoundland, and he has the saddest face in the whole world. And Colin felt this dog looked like him. Oh. So he adopted George. George had been badly treated when he was young and was very afraid of people, especially men. He sort of cowered in a corner. And Colin couldn't really manage him, so he took him to an obedience class. And after several sessions, he asked the teacher, he said, you know, I must be doing something wrong. I don't really know how to connect with this dog, so I'm going to start here. As Colin says, he won't even eat in front of me, let alone let me hug him. The instructor nodded slowly, looked down at George, who was standing still, staring at both of us. He needs to feel love from you. He needs his faith in men restored. I stood there thinking about what she just said to me in a room full of people and dogs. You need to make yourself more emotionally available. You need to learn to show love. Suddenly I felt very alone. It was almost the same advice my psychiatrist had recently given me. I felt my face getting flushed as I gazed at George's big, sweet face and sad eyes. I wanted to hug him since the minute I saw him. And yet I'd always held back. Maybe I shouldn't have. But to be totally honest, I struggled with giving physical affection all my life. I didn't exactly grow up in a family of huggers. In the past few months without Jane, that's his wife who left, this had only gotten worse. I wanted to help George, I really did, and I guess deep down maybe I wanted him to help me too. I dropped to my knees in front of him and nudged his forehead with mine, taking his head in my hands. I could feel his warm breath against my cheek as I wrapped my arms around his neck and shoulders. Instead of recoiling, which is what I was certain he would do, he leaned into me and gently licked my face. "There, you see," said the instructor. "Was that so hard?" I had to close my eyes to stop the tears from spilling out. And it's from this point on that George and Colin begin to heal each other. And it's a wonderful story of second chances. And the inmates understand this absolutely more than anybody else.
Hard not to cry, like George. And, or rather, like Colin. Thank you very, very much. That was wonderful. Now we'll take a short break.